calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Abraham Lincoln, our quote for the day, we the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution. And I'm telling you, there's some men perverting the Constitution who are in bad need of being overthrown one way or the other, in all probability at the ballot box. Let's just keep it to that for the moment. Coming up on today's program, I'll be challenging conservative Jeff Johnson on his concern about free speech by teachers' union. Rick Seifert is going to be dropping by, or Seifert is going to be dropping by. But right, and the big news, of course, out of the UK is that it's going to be very, very difficult, damn near impossible, to get on an airplane out of the UK, and very difficult to get on an airplane today in the United States. Because they're going to be taking away your shampoo, your hand lotion, your you know, any kind of liquids, and the lines are growing, and the right-wingers are going hysterical about it. And yesterday we had Tony Snow going out saying that essentially a vote for Ned Lamont was a vote for the terrorists, and gee, it just happens that they knew that there was going to be this thing blowing up today. Dr. Helen Caldicott is with us in the studio right now. She has a new book out, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. And Dr. Caldicott, with all the bloviating going on about terrorism and the terrorist threat, and holy cow, they might bring a little liquid on an airplane, it's really not the big threat, is it?
No, the real nuclear terrorists in the world are Russia and America. Of the 30,000 hydrogen bombs today in the world, Russia and America own 97%, and they've still got thousands of them on hair trigger alert, ready to go at the press of the button by Vladimir Putin or George Bush. So serious is it that Yeltsin in 1995 in January got within 10 seconds of blowing up America when the Russians made a mistake and thought a Norwegian weather satellite was actually a first strike attack by the United States, and the US still has a policy to fight and win a nuclear war against Russia, which means the end of life on Earth. Both of them have enough weapons to overkill every person on Earth 12 times. That's a Pentagon term. You kill them, they stand up again. You kill them, they stand overkill. 12. So, you know, no one's talking about this, but and this is the real, real threat that faces all of us every day.
And and for those people who are hysterical or concerned, or, I mean, there's some legitimate concern, I suppose, of asymmetrical attacks, people who don't have nuclear technology, who want to exploit nuclear technology, the real threat to the United States, or perhaps the greatest threat to the United States, is not somebody smuggling 2 ounces of nitroglycerin onto an airplane. The real threat is sitting in the cooling towers, in the cooling pools.
Yeah, you've got nuclear targets all over the country. You've got 103 nuclear power plants, and beside them, huge pools of very, very radioactive nuclear waste sitting there. In a reactor is as much long-lived radiation as that released by the explosion of 1,000 Hiroshima weapons. But beside them, in the cooling pools, they call them swimming pools euphemistically, is as much as 30 times as much radiation. You need a handheld rocket to bust the cooling pool, let the water out, and that material will melt down and just contaminate forever huge areas of this country, let alone flying a plane into a nuclear power plant. So, in fact, if I was a terrorist, I could easily melt a nuclear power plant down within hours. I mean, they're just sitting ducks, and no one takes any notice of this. And since 9/11, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has not increased security at any of the nuclear power plants, can you believe?
And yet, in the 9/11 Commission report, they pointed out that Mohammed Atta originally was thinking of flying one of those planes into Indian Point's nuclear reactor because it would have contaminated hundreds of miles around New York City, including New York City. And he ultimately decided not to because he was certain that they must be protected by surface-to-air missiles.
Yeah, well, they're not. And, you know,
and they're still not.
No. In my book, I've described a meltdown at Indian Point coming from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Over 700,000 people would die, and if the wind's blowing in the right direction. Can you imagine the roads in Westchester clogged and gridlocked with people trying to get to the kindergartens to pick their children up, inhaling radioactive material, tasting this metallic smell in their mouth, dying within weeks with their hair falling out, bleeding and vomiting to death. And then the stuff gets to Manhattan, the stock market closes, no one would ever live there again. I mean, this is a very realistic scenario.
And it need not even be. We're talking to Dr. Helen Caldicott. Her new book, Nuclear Power, is not the answer. And I eventually will want to get to nuclear power here as well. I guess we are, indirectly.
We are.
It's not even, you wouldn't even necessarily need an airplane to do it. We were talking a little earlier about the experience you had last week with a boat.
Well, you know, there was nearly a meltdown the other day in Sweden. They lost their external electricity supply. Don't forget, global warming's happening. And I think there was a storm or something. So the electricity went. Of their four emergency generators, two failed to start, and for 20 minutes or more, no one knew what was happening, like at Three Mile Island or Chernobyl, and they said it's the closest anyone's come since Chernobyl to a major meltdown.
Why was this not headlines in the United States? Why is it that I'm learning about this
I'm
from you now?
I'm just laughing at you. I mean, why don't you report the world news in a way that everyone understands? I have to say, I just flew in from Australia yesterday, and you know, we do get the world news. We get the BBC. We get Radio Deutsche Welle. We hear what's we see the dead babies in Lebanon and in Iraq, you know, on the television. Why are you being protected, so to speak, from the truth that's happening in the world? That's very serious.
It is. It is very serious. It is very problematic.
And Americans can take anything, and they should know what's happening, being the most powerful country on Earth.
And to bring this back to nuclear power for a moment, a nuclear power plant need not be brought down by a lack of physical electricity.
No, all you need to do is cut the external electricity supply, and the generators, emergency generators, don't always work. If I was Timothy McVeigh and I had a little speedboat and I was outside Indian Point the other day on Bobby Kennedy's boat, I could have driven a little powerboat full of explosives, fertilizer explosives, into the cooling pipes that suck in 1 million gallons of water a minute from the Hudson. Two cooling pipes, each 1 million gallons, burst the pipes, and within a couple of hours those reactors would melt down. I mean, they're absolute sitting ducks. I don't know.
You weren't intercepted by the Coast Guard when you were there?
Nobody appeared. It was absolute silence, and we got quite close to the plant.
Amazing.
So I don't know why it hasn't happened already. I mean, they all should be shut down tomorrow, if not today.
Shut down.
Shut down. Yeah. Only 20% of your electricity comes from nuclear power. You could save 25% of the electricity you currently use by turning off your lights.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should use clothes dryers. You should hang your clothes outside in the sun to be dried by that reactor in the sky. In the winter, hang them up by your furnace, they dry in a flash.
Mm-hmm.
That would save nearly as much power as the nuclear energy industry produces. Don't use dishwashers. Put in some water in your sink. Don't keep running it. Water with a plug and wash your dishes, which I do every day.
The way we learned how to do as kids. Yeah,
I know. Every day. You know, there are so many. Turn off all your lights.
Mm-hmm.
Have only one light on in the room in which you're working, and do not have any other lights on in the house. Turn off all your VCRs, those blinking lights, all night. Turn them off. They suck a lot of juice out of the grid. And then you can provide the whole of the electricity you need from wind power, solar power, geothermal, cogeneration. It's all here. And I'm about to write a roadmap to provide you with clean, non-global warming electricity with no nuclear power. The technology's here. All you need is to get your politicians to represent you and do the right thing.
Yeah, and well said. We're talking with Dr. Helen Caldicott. Her new book, Nuclear Power, is Not the Answer. Dr. Caldicott, we have about a minute before we have to take a break, and then we can continue our conversation. But Australia, you're Australian.
I am.
And I've spent a fair amount of time in Australia.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to me that Australia is that far apart from the United States in terms of our mutual addiction to oil, let's say.
We've got a very bad Prime Minister called John Howard. Mm. We've got rude names for him in terms of his relationship with George Bush. But he is totally run by the coal industry, and coal is producing global warming, and by the nuclear industry, because we've got 40% of the world's richest uranium. He's cut down any research on solar. And we're a country bathed in sun, a huge continent bathed
so much so that a third of it is unusable because there's too much sun.
I know. And then they closed down a wind farm that was to be built because there was an orange-bellied parrot. They've seen one in 100 years or something and said, well, you know, one could be killed every 100 years. I mean, the thing is so corrupt. And I've just launched my book over there. And I testified before John Howard, he's the Prime Minister's, his commission on nuclear power the other day, and they're physicists. And they said, well, we don't necessarily agree with you. And I said, I just gave this lecture at Harvard to my alma mater the other day, and the doctors were absolutely stunned by the information. I'm not wrong, I'm right.
Yeah.
Yet to make a physicist understand medicine is not easy unless they themselves get a malignancy, and then they get it.
More with Dr. Helen Caldicott in just a moment. 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartmann Program.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
It never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up the lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. Senators on a holiday, the army recruiters in the parking lot, hustling the kids, they're juggling pots. Listen, young man, listen to my plan. Gonna make you money, gonna make you a man. Bam, bam.
Yeah, that's just cannon fodder, and the cannons are certainly firing, tragically. Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Our program syndicated by Air America Radio, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. Dr. Helen Caldicott is in the office or in the studio here with us. Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, her new book. Dr. Caldicott, in May of 1986, I flew into Frankfurt, Germany, and I remember walking down. It was raining, and I remember walking. I got off the plane, and I had not, you know, I was like not connected to the news in the last 24 hours, and got off the train and was walking to my hotel, and the city was empty. It was a ghost town because it was raining. And I got to the hotel, and as soon as I got in, the guy said, you're going to want to take your coat off and rinse it off down up when you get upstairs. And I'm like, what's the problem? And he's, the cloud is going over from Chernobyl right now, and everybody is hiding inside. We went on to live in Germany that year, 86, 87, and I used to walk through the supermarket with a Geiger counter, and you walk by the mushrooms or the milk, and it would go like that. What are the consequences to we, the people of this planet, and to the rest of animal life as well, of the byproducts of nuclear power?
Well, at the moment, 40% of the European landmass is still radioactive. There are 300
farms. As a result of Chernobyl.
Yeah. There are 300 farms in Wales, in Britain, who grow lambs, and the lambs are so full of cesium-137 that causes brain cancer and muscle cancer, they can't be sold on the market. The mushrooms are still radioactive, because what got out was strontium-90 that lasts for 600 years. Bioconcentrates in the food chain, like the grass hundreds of times, and then in the milk hundreds of times, then in the human lactating breast hundreds of times, then in babies. Mm-hmm. And babies are 10 to 20 times more sensitive to radiation than adults. They get cancer much more readily. And this stuff lasts, and it causes bone cancer or leukemia. So, you know, this food will be radioactive for 600 years. I do not buy European food because I don't know what batches are radioactive and what are not. Cesium-137 lasts for 600 years. So, and it's concentrated continually in the food. And you can't taste like Hershey's Milk Kiss and say, I can taste the strontium-90 in this. Why? Because there was a major meltdown at Three Mile Island. Mm-hmm. Hershey's is 13 miles as the crow flies from Three Mile Island. There's been a huge cover-up. We don't know how much radiation got out. But in my book, Nuclear Power's Not the Answer, I've got a lot of stuff from a whistleblower from the Hershey's labs describing how they powdered the milk for 6 weeks or 2 months so that the radioactive iodine would decay. But then what about the strontium that lasts for 600 years?
Man.
And the plutonium that lasts for 500,000 years? And a lot of that apparently got out too. So, you see, we didn't evolve so our senses, taste, smell or sight, could pick up radiation. And so you don't taste it. And when you get your breast cancer or the child gets the leukemia, it doesn't wear a little sign saying what made it. So it's a cryptogenic silent thing. And the incubation time for cancer is not 2 days like if I sneeze on you and you get a cold. It's 5 to 60 years. And that's why the nuclear industry are able to get away with what they do, because it's hard to tell which cancers are caused by what, except there are now clusters of cancer in people around, living around nuclear power plants.
So I remember when we lived in Germany, the original limit in milk was 5 becquerels per liter, and then they raised it to 50 becquerels per liter, and then they raised it to 500 becquerels per liter because they didn't want to stop selling milk.
That's just the general measurement of radiation, be it strontium or cesium in the milk. And I suppose the Europeans were scared out of their wits at first, and then after a couple of years you adjust because you've got to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Now in Australia we have totally non-radioactive food, and we should be advertising that to a radioactive Europe and say, eat our clean food, but we also want to sell our uranium.
That's right.
And by pushing uranium, we're pushing cancer, because it gets fissioned in a reactor, becomes 1 billion times more radioactive. And then Bob's your uncle, that's radioactive waste that lasts for 500,000 years. So
we're
cancer pushers in Australia.
Yeah, and in the United States. We have about 30 seconds left here. Dr. Helen Caldicott, our new book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. What can we do?
Well, educate yourselves. You know, Jefferson said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. Read my book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. You'll get everything you need, then you've got enough information to debate and beat George Bush on television any night. Mobilize yourselves. If you're a doctor, get the medical profession. I'll come and speak at your annual conference. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, I'll come there. This is a medical issue. It's not political. It's medical.
Mm-hmm.
Close down every single reactor in America. Become the world's leader for sanity and survival, and get into alternative energy. It's all there. You can do it. You're a good democracy if you use it.
Spoken like a prophet or prophetess. Dr. Helen Caldicott, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer is the book. And is there your website?
Yeah, nuclearpolicy.org.
Nuclear policy.
And there's a huge amount of information on that.
Great.
That's my institute, Nuclear Policy Research Institute.
Nuclearpolicy.org.
Yep.
It's 27 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartmann Radio Program for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. We'll be right back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartmann.
I'm not ready to be nice. I'm not ready to back down. Still many sailors are doing time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. Probably wouldn't if I could. I'm mad as hell. Can bring myself to do what it is.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartmann here with you. David Tebow, our erstwhile conservative foe from Cybercast News Service, CNS.com, who's often been on the program with me debating a whole range of issues, has been diagnosed this morning with a very severe cancer and was just transferred to, David Poole?
John Hopkins Oncology Ward.
Yeah, so he's just been moved over to the John Hopkins Oncology Ward. Keep him in your thoughts and prayers. I mean, even though he's a right-wing wacko, he's a decent human being. And his name is spelled T-H-I-B-A-U-L-T, if anybody wants to, you know, pass along a hello to him or something like that. David Tebow is probably not going to be with us on the program again for a while. Hopefully he makes it through this thing. Apparently he's had this challenge before, and now it's back. Larry Johnson is on the line with us. Larry Johnson, a former CIA officer and terrorism expert and now security expert. And, Larry, we're talking to you from Belgium?
Yeah, just outside of Bastogne.
Uh-huh. Well, welcome. Welcome to the program, and thank you for being on with us. What's your take on what's happening right now in the U.K.?
I take it with a big grain of salt. Very skeptical. The Brits can't seem to get their story straight. It's an imminent threat, but they've been following it for months. And even though they've been following it for months, they're not quite sure what the threat was. So therefore, they don't allow any carry-on bag on board. So not that I'm suggesting that Blair and Bush would play politics with threat information, except I am suggesting that because they've done it repeatedly.
Yeah.
So this is, unfortunately, they're not entitled to a benefit of the doubt because they've demonstrably lied about facts going to war in Iraq. They've demonstrably lied about his threats. They've been willing to disclose information of a sensitive nature in the past in order to suit their own personal political objectives. So I look at this very skeptically. I mean, I was in government or just left government when we dealt with the Bojinka plot back in December 1994, 1995, January of 95, in which Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of the World Trade Center bomb, tried to blow up 12 jumbo jets. He did succeed in getting a bomb on board a Philippine airliner, but the plot was disrupted. And in that case, there were security measures you could take without alarming the public.
Yeah. What do you think is an appropriate response to this kind of thing? I mean, as recently as a few months ago, Congressman Ed Markey was introducing legislation to check all cargo on passenger planes, and
right.
The Republicans shot it down because it would have cut into the tax break for millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, and that the cargo really is the main loophole and one of the greatest vulnerabilities. And so right now, I would not allow any cargo to go on board any passenger plane because there is no effective technological solution in place to screen that cargo to ensure that there are no explosives contained in that.
But that's a major profit center for the airlines.
Yes. And so this, you know, once again, we've seen where profit takes precedence over security.
Yeah. Now,
from a practical standpoint, what you want to do is limit no liquids on board a plane by a passenger in excess of 8 ounces.
Why 8 ounces, Larry Johnson?
16 ounces and above is the kind of threat that can cause catastrophic damage on board an aircraft. 8 ounces or less will not.
Even nitroglycerin?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, the nitroglycerin is too volatile to carry around in a bottle. And even the liquid explosive that was used by Ramzi Youssef back in December of 94, that itself was very volatile. They were just lucky they didn't blow themselves up.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's when you get above 8 ounces that you get into the level. You know, you don't want to be personally holding 8 ounces when it goes off because it could kill or damage you significantly. But
sure.
In terms of really causing a threat to the aircraft, you got to get above 8 ounces, and then you're talking about some damage. So you know, it's very simple. Force anybody carrying any water on board of 8 ounces or less to drink it in front of you to show that it is in fact water.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some common sense things that can be done without this mass panic and checking everything, including wallets. I mean, this is security, mindless security,
yeah.
Really, with people thinking out of fear as opposed to out of professional judgment.
We spoke to our correspondent from Talk Radio News this morning who had just gotten off a flight from LaGuardia, and she said that they took away her lipstick.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just craziness. I mean, that shows that the threat information that's being disseminated is so vague to be useless. And, you know, to remove lipstick is just, you know, what are you going to do? Go up and make up the pilot?
Yeah. Maybe it's plastique in the form of lipstick. I'm curious, yesterday, Tony Snow came out and made this little speech about how the fact that the Democrats had voted for Ned Lamont over Joe Lieberman was an indication that another 9/11 could happen. And I'm also getting reports, and perhaps you've seen these, that Blair had informed Bush at least a few days ago that there was this threat that the British are all going nuts about today. What's the timeline there? And is just literally 15 minutes ago, I got an email in my email box from GOP USA. You know, headlined U.S. air threat level raised to red, and I go to it, and it's a whole article about, hey, how did the New York Times not out this one? You know, and attacking the Republic. You know, do you think that they're playing politics with this? And do you have any evidence of that, Larry Johnson?
Absolutely. I mean, look, one of the incentives for Bush and Blair to go out with this threat right now is the fact that they're experiencing a debacle with respect to a ceasefire in Lebanon.
Yeah.
And, you know, Israel is on the verge of having some significant damage done to it because of its failed military policy. So, you know, you get back to the old terror threats, scare the hell out of people and distract attention from the disaster policies in Lebanon, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan.
Mm.
So, you know, unfortunately, you know, I wouldn't have said this 2 or 3 years ago, but we have seen a consistent pattern of deception, of lying, of misrepresentation by both Tony Blair and George Bush. And I think it is entirely up to the American people and the British public to, you know, be skeptical and to challenge and to question. Because just to accept these facts without any critical thinking, I think, is an abdication of our responsibility as free citizens.
Yet at the same time, a train did get blown up in the tube. You know, a train did get blown up in Spain. There have been some terror. There are people
right
out there who, I mean, you know.
Sure, but there's ways to deal with that. Let's also remember the British police killed an innocent Brazilian electrician claiming that he was a terrorist. When it turned out, he was just going to work and some guys were chasing him, and he did what any normal person would do, being chased by thugs, you run.
Yeah. Would it be safe to say, Larry Johnson, that the best way for the United States to be secure from attack is to become a good citizen in the world rather than be viewed as the bully of the world?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think fascism is not the road to security and safety. And unfortunately, I realize those are, you know, provocative words, but a good friend of mine who is a Republican, a leading lobbyist among Republicans, himself claimed that he thought that the Bush administration was trending down the road of fascism. So when I hear that from a Republican friend who is directly involved with lobbying, that tells me that, you know, this is not just a bunch of isolated, crazy, kooky Democrats saying that. It's a genuine concern with a fear of terror is being used as an excuse to take away rights and to avoid constitutional requirements.
Yeah, Larry Johnson, former CIA officer. Larry, where do we go from here on all this? Another question. You're in Belgium right now. How's continental Europe? You know, they tend to sometimes look at the UK and look at the United States in a different way than the Brits do, who certainly look at themselves.
Well,
what's the response there?
They are appalled by the United States. I mean, the United States is probably the most unpopular it has ever been in Europe, going back 50, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I just left the site of Bastogne, where U.S. forces played a critical role in stopping the Germans back in 1945 during the Battle of the Bulge. And yet, you know, the gratitude that the Belgians had at that time is quickly evaporating as they watch the United States back policies which are, you know, seem generally as destructive and not promoting international unity. So I think it's an unfortunate time. And one thing the media needs to do, and one thing you can do in particular, go back and remind people. Remember that Miami 7 that supposedly had this great terrorist plot afoot, and it turned out they didn't even have operational plans. They didn't have explosives. They hadn't gotten to the point of actual execution, yet it was presented as a terrorist threat imminent to be carried out.
Yeah, and they were functionally illiterate. I mean, it was the gang that couldn't shoot straight.
So that's why I come back to Alberto Gonzalez and George Bush. None of these people have earned the right of credibility. You know, if anything, we have great reason to question their truthfulness.
Yeah.
And their exaggeration in the past, and their misrepresentation of fact, and their willingness to lie. I mean, it's been time after time that they have lied and mispresented facts.
Yeah.
So I think it is incumbent upon the media, in particular, to hold their feet to the fire.
So
that's what the fourth state's supposed to do.
You're very much by way of reacting to the folks in the community who said the little boy has cried wolf too many times, although occasionally the little boy is right.
Well, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that we do not take threats seriously. I'm not saying that we should not impose appropriate security measures.
Yeah.
But what's being done right now in Great Britain not only is not appropriate, it is counterproductive. And because what it shows is just that the simple threat can be enough to shut down airline travel. And, you know, if I'm someone in Al-Qaeda, I would just simply know all I have to do is issue threats. I don't even have to have a real operational capability. And I can help bring the airline traffic in the West to a halt.
Right. These guys win. Larry Johnson, Larry C. Johnson, the former CIA officer. What's the best website out there, Larry, for you?
I've got my blog at www.noquarter.typepad.com. NoQuarterTypePad.com.
NoQuarterTypePad.com. Larry, thanks a lot for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much.
Great speaking with you.
It's talk to you. Bye.
It's Larry Johnson is on the line with us. Larry Johnson.
It's 46 minutes past the hour. Holy cow. I'm all over the place here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Passion when you need it the most. Oh, you die. You kick up the leaves and the magic is lost. 'Cause you had a bad day. You take your one down. Sing it that song just to turn it around. But then you don't know.
Well, let's see. George and Tony have been having a few bad days here. 893 days, by the way, 12 hours, 8 minutes, 10 seconds until George Bush leaves office voluntarily, assuming he's not impeached. They've been having a few bad days recently. And you'll recall Tom Ridge, when he was the head of the Department of Homeland Security during the run-up to the 2004 election, kept going, raise the alert level! Uh-oh, raise the alert level! Every time John Kerry got a little traction, every time there was a bad story about George W. Bush, it would be, we got to go up to orange, got to go up to orange, raise the alert level. Be afraid, be very afraid. There's an election coming after all. And suddenly, after the November elections, they stopped raising the alert levels. What was it? They thought the Democrats were the terrorists? I'm sorry. If the definition of a terrorist is somebody who uses the process of terrorizing a civilian populace to achieve a particular goal, then put me on the record as saying that the Republican Party is a terrorist organization. Because Tom Ridge, after he left his job as Director of Homeland Security, he went on a whole bunch of TV programs. I saw him on the Jon Stewart show. I'm pretty sure I saw him on Jay Leno. And he was asked several times, why did you raise those alert levels every time John Kerry got some traction in the 2004 election? And Tom Ridge, to his credit, I guess, although maybe it's why you don't see him anywhere any longer, Tom Ridge said, well, it wasn't my idea. It came from the White House. At the bottom of the next hour, by the way, 40 minutes from now, we're going to be talking with David Pitori, who lost a member of his family, lost his brother James at the World Trade Center on 9/11, about his thoughts on how we should be dealing with stuff like this, you know, is this the boy called Wolf thing or what? You know, what's going on? This so-called terror plot, or possibly, who knows, terror plot coming out of the U.K., Larry Johnson, who we just interviewed from a bar in Belgium, when David first called him this morning, or was it Heidi who first got in touch with him? Yeah, it was Heidi. First got in touch with him. He was like, well, I don't know. I've had three beers. I'm sitting here in the bar, but yeah, I'll talk with you. So we put him on the air. But Larry's, you know, a little skeptical. These guys have done this before, you know, yelled wolf. Are they yelling wolf or not? Well, he in his blog over there at noquarter.typepad.com, that blog got copied over to Daily Kos an hour or so ago, and he essentially said that in the blog. And one of the folks, neocons suck, posted a reply over at the Kos that just rhetorical question and answer. I think this is a fascinating question. If you were a terrorist, would you board in the U.K., France, Qatar, or Mexico, given history and the state of the world, worldwide airport security? The answer from this poster, certainly not the U.K. I've been through the airport. I went through Heathrow just a few months ago. Security's pretty tight. I probably, you know, if I was going to try and get on an international flight and do something awful, I would not think the U.K. would be the place to go. Question, is Britain a staunch U.S. ally, and is Tony Blair, like Bush, a lame duck? Answer, yes, nothing to lose, everything to gain by pulling one out of the bag at just the right time. Question,
If you needed to get the price of oil down prior to U.S. elections, what would be the best way to do it? Two possible answers. One, discover a new unlimited supply in America. Or B, terrorist attack, drastically stifle travel. Question. If this is anything smacking of a legitimate threat, would the Dow Jones Industrial Average go up or down? What do you think the Dow, well, it would, what happened on 9/11? It went down dramatically. Well, it's up 17 points right now. The business community clearly does not see this as a problem. And what would happen to the price of gold? The price of gold would be going through the roof. Well, at this time yesterday, gold was selling for $650.60 an ounce. Right now it's at $640.30 an ounce. It's down $10.20 an ounce, the price of gold. So obviously the folks who deal in gold as a hedge against, you know, freaking out, they don't take this seriously. All of which has to, you know, as the blogger over there says, it's all starting to ring familiar. A phantom enemy who can't be stopped, not that we're not trying, but can only be exterminated. Yes, we need to exterminate them. I need a final solution. I mean, is that where we're going? Could it be that crazy? Is that maybe where we already are? You know, we just opened Camp 6 in Guantanamo Bay, complete with death chamber. We're building, we just finished another concentration camp. We'll take your calls on this after the news at the top of the hour and get in this conversation about what's really going on. I just got a call from my niece flying through an airport telling me about, you know, what general craziness in the air right now. A lot of panic, tragically. We'll stay with this, and we've got a lot of other stuff in the news. Tony Snow, what Tony Snow said about Lieberman yesterday. This is, and you wonder, did he say it because he knew that what was going to happen today is what happened? I'll share that clip with you after the news, too. 57 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
This is absolutely incredible. Just, I come into the studio here, 5 hours ago to start doing show prep for this program and the morning show I do before this. And it's 6 hours ago, I guess, now. And, you know, the news is all about what's coming out of London. I open my email. And here's an email from GOP USA, GOPUSA.com. London police disrupt terrorist plot to blow up aircraft in mid-flight. You know, read all about it today in the forum. So I click the link, and it drops me into this discussion, shall we say. And it's just amazing. I mean, I'm my question is, how did we keep the New York Times from tipping the terrorists off to this investigation? And Sherry, the moderator over there, says, well, because it was in the UK, no doubt about it. Amazing. Amazing. The GOP politicizing this thing. Well, what do you expect? Here's Tony Snow yesterday talking about this. Two interesting things about this quote. Number one, he's trying to say essentially that the Democratic Party, by voting for Ned Lamont instead of Joe Lieberman, are wusses, like, you know, hey, gee, we know the terror, you know, a terror event is coming, so let's try to, you know, conflate these two. And then secondly, he says that Osama bin Laden did what he did. He was empowered by George Bush Sr. George Bush, keep in mind, George Bush in 1991, unless, you know, my math is wrong, I don't think it is, in 1991, George Bush Sr. was president. Here's Tony Snow. Hang on just a second here. Let's fire this thing up.
Do you take the war on terror seriously with all the developments going on around the world? And if so, how do you fight it to win? There seem to be two approaches. And in the Connecticut race, one of the approaches is ignore the difficulties and walk away.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because somebody is opposed to the occupation of Iraq, which has nothing to do with terrorism or Al-Qaeda, or at least it had nothing to do with it until George Bush got in here and screwed it up. Number one. So here, and then the second part.
Now, when the United States walked away, in the opinion of Osama bin Laden in 1991.
In 1991, when Bush Sr. was president.
Bin Laden drew from that the conclusion that Americans were weak and wouldn't stay the course, and that led to September 11th.
And you got to ask yourself, you know, did George Jr. say to Tony Snow, go out there and stick my father, you know, with a stick in the eye? Give him a good poke. I don't know. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Kenny in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Kenny, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I'm going to try to be quick and on how good my phone connection is. Couple things. I heard about the Stephanopoulos saying that Paul Rose called out to leave him in camp and told him that the boss said that they're going to help him on his campaign, whatever they got to do.
Right, and apparently what Lieberman said is the thing you can do to help me is to not endorse me, and so today the official word is Bush is not going to endorse Lieberman.
Yeah, I tell you what, you're going to see Lieberman go so hard to the right, you probably won't even recognize Lieberman.
Yeah, I think he's gonna pull a Zell Miller.
Yeah, and as for these terrorists things and all this stuff, look, it's going to be a lot of powerful people come down if the Democrats. True Democrats get control of this Congress in 2016.
Yeah.
This don't just affect our election and our administration over here. This affects British because if the truth start coming about what's going on, this affects both countries.
Tony Blair could be along with George W. Bush could be facing the possibility of being tried for war crimes. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right, Kenny. Thanks for the call, and you know, a good point well made. And you know, the Blair administration, the Bush administration, they both have lied us into this thing, and they both have got their butts on the line, and they both have a lot to be worried about. And gee, isn't it convenient, Kelly in Montague, Massachusetts? Is that right, Kelly?
That's right.
Hey, Kelly.
I gotta say, you're right. Blair and Bush could definitely be tried for war crimes if and only if. True Democrats take control of the Congress. So how desperate do you think this administration and Prime Minister Blair are going to be to do everything within their power to keep that from happening?
Oh, I think this is just the beginning. I mean, look at these seven guys down in Florida. One of them didn't even have shoes. I mean, basically illiterate people, and we're being told, oh, there's an operational threat against the United States. Come on.
Here's what people need to remember. They were called homegrown terrorists. So what's the definition of a homegrown terrorist? You don't have to have the means. You don't have to have anything. All it needs to happen is the U.S. government says, we suspect you. Well, that could happen to any one of us, and it's a scary thing. But back onto the 9/11.
Well, Kelly, let me just add to that, if I may interrupt you for just a moment. Under the Patriot Act, if you disrupt commerce...
Uh-huh.
You are guilty of terrorism. So if, Kelly, you go out and stand in front of a store and tell people, this restaurant, they had food poisoning there last week, and you disrupt their commerce, you are now a terrorist.
Well, we're on the fast track to fascism.
Yeah.
That's what we are right now. But, you know, here's what I worry about. Now, you know that a lot of people, particularly now that the 9/11 Commission came out and said, we think the government lied. Okay, they came out. That was in the Washington Post on August 2nd, and it's been referred to the Inspector General. I don't know if you're aware
of that. Right, and it got virtually no publicity other than on programs like this.
No publicity whatsoever. Total media blackout. But that's what's happening, and if you go, people that blog, people that go on the Internet, they've read it if they're interested.
Yeah.
But you got to think. Now, why are they lying? Either they're trying to cover up incompetence or something worse.
Yeah.
Now, that's a pretty scary thought, and when you think of the November elections, there are plenty of Americans afraid of their own government right now because they don't know how desperate the government is and whether or not they're capable of orchestrating some horrible thing in this country so that people will be a little leery about switching canoes in the middle of the stream, so to speak.
Well, it's not that we haven't considered it in the past. I mean, thank God, as far as we can tell, we haven't done it, although, you know, I agree with you, the verdict is out on 9/11. But Operation Northwoods was a plan back 30 years ago to paint an F-16 in Cuban colors and shoot down a U.S. airliner over Florida and blame it on Castro and use it as a pretext for an invasion.
And that was from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And the only thing that put a stop to it, from what I understand about Northwoods, was Kennedy said absolutely not.
Right. What put a stop to it was Jack Kennedy.
That would be as if Peter Pace said to Bush, hey, you know what? We can fix up a little something to get everyone stirred up and scared. That's how high.
Yep. We just lost Kelly. But, yeah, apparently Alberto Gonzalez didn't like where you're going with that, Kelly. Sorry. Kevin in Savannah, Georgia. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just want to talk strategy here for a minute, if I could.
Sure.
You're an intelligent guy. I agree with a lot you say, but it's so frustrating to listen to you and other Democrats take the wrong side anytime there's an issue like this. They need to, well, Democrats.
Let me tell you, Kevin, I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent.
Oh,
but not,
okay.
But
okay. Well,
so,
am I. But as of right now, at this point, I'm pulling for Democrats.
Yeah. Ditto.
But they need to get.
Although I say I voted for Nader in 2000. So.
I didn't go that far. But
anyhow, as you were saying,
they can't change anything until they win elections.
Yeah,
period.
I agree.
And, I mean, 06, 08, it's going to be a one issue debate for the entire election. National security, period.
And that's if the Republicans have their way. The fact of the matter is more Americans are concerned about the fact that they don't have access to health care and that their job may, you know, be shipped off to China than are worried about terrorism.
I disagree. I disagree. I think Rove will, it's the old playbook. He creates a fear. He makes you, puts up two false choices and makes you stand on one side of the fence or the other. You either stand on the strong side or the weak side.
I agree with you that he has done that. And what the Democrats have to do is not play his game. They need to stand up and say, no, wait a minute. There are other issues that the American people are concerned about and actually turn those into real issues.
I disagree. I think you need to attack them back on national security. The fact is that
there's
a real threat out there. When these little threats come up about this last one, for instance, raising a threat level, you need to say, absolutely, you're absolutely correct. There is a credible threat out there. And the war in Iraq has made us weaker.
That's
here,
right.
List the reasons.
And 9/11 happened on George Bush's watch. And the CIA sent a guy down to Crawford, Texas in August of 2001, which is a very exceptional thing to have happen, to interrupt George Bush's vacation and tell him that Osama bin Laden was going to attack America. And Bush patted him on the head and said, okay, you've covered your butt. Go back to Washington, D.C.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. And somebody needs to bring up the idiocy of saying we're fighting them there so that we don't have to fight them here. It shows a total lack of understanding of the enemy. This is a global war on terror. Are we saying because all of our resources in Iraq that Al-Qaeda can't attack us?
I think, Kevin, we need to even take it a step beyond that and say it's not a global war on terror. It is the world, many people in the world, blowing back against us as a consequence of our international policies, particularly our consumption of oil. Yeah, I mean, do you really think that any terrorists would have come after us if we hadn't been sucking up to Saudi Arabia all these years?
But instead of saying there's not a real threat out there, they're just hyping it. You need to attack them on national security.
He's
made us weaker.
Good point.
And
good point. Good point. I agree with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
I cleared the rocks and timber from the wild New England shore. I labored long and hard to make it grow. I built the first log cabins and I raised a family, told King George and all his redcoats where to go. I'm the man that built the bridges, I'm the man that laid the track. I'm the man that built this country with my shoulders and my back. I'm the man that built the power dams and oiled all the cars. And I laid down the cornerstones of this great land of ours. I'm the boy that...
Indeed, the working man and women of America who have made this country great. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Small Dog Electronics sponsoring our program today. 1-800-511-MAX. 1-800-511-MACS. SmallDog.com, the website for all things Macintosh, all things computer, all things electronic. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen.
Hi. Well, the president is talking. He stopped quite short of Islamo-fascist, but he did talk about Islam who are fascists.
Hmm.
So he didn't use the buzzword of Islamofascist, but he got, like, right at the edge there.
And we're back to General Blinken's my God is bigger than your God thing here?
We're right back. We moved. If we'd even moved away, we've moved right back to it, trying to, you know, give him support and to talk about this war on terror, and we won't quit. And I'll tell you, if the Homeland Security chief, Chertoff, patted himself any more on the back today, I just don't know what to do. I
mean, his arm would be in a sling.
And then, yes, and then Condoleezza Rice says, well, you know, essentially we've learned from Katrina. What? I mean,
she learned how to shop for shoes in Katrina.
It is, I mean, these guys are revisionist history everywhere.
Yeah, it's downright spooky. Now, I have a question for you. Yesterday, Tony Snow held a press conference, or, you know, did his thing.
His briefing, yeah.
And in 1991, correct me if I'm wrong, Bush Sr. was president, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Ellen, to this clip. It's just 25 seconds. This is Tony Snow yesterday.
Do you take the war on terror seriously with all the developments going on around the world? And if so, how do you fight it to win? There seem to be two approaches. And in the Connecticut race, one of the approaches is ignore the difficulties and walk away. Now, when the United States walked away, in the opinion of Osama bin Laden in 1991, bin Laden drew from that the conclusion that Americans were weak and wouldn't stay the course, and that led to September 11th.
Did I just hear Tony Snow say that Bush Sr.'s behavior in 1991 led to September 11th?
This is a very big slam at not just Daddy-O, but mainly James Baker and the people that worked with Secretary Baker. And Baker, as you know, has been trying to influence policy at the State Department for a very long period of time, along with other people who were involved in the Bush administration.
So this wasn't just a typo. This is what we're hearing, a reflection here of war inside the Republican Party?
We're hearing the fact that, hey, guys, we know we've got it right, and Daddy-O and your counterparts just didn't get it.
Wow. And George...
And it's also a slap at Colin Powell, too.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm curious, is this... Am I the only person who noticed this? I'm not seeing... You know, I didn't notice it in the New York Times or the Washington Post today.
No, I saw it on some blog somewhere, and Victoria was down there yesterday and thought it quite odd, as she would say. You know how Victoria says,
she's very understated.
Quite odd.
Yes, yes. But it's, you know, I'm just amazed that the New York Times didn't pick it up, or somebody. You know, it's nobody asked the follow up question of, wait a minute, you just said the actions of the administration in 1991 led directly to 9/11, and that was George Bush Sr. Are you blaming George Bush Sr. for 9/11? Because that's what he just said.
Right.
I mean, that's just...
It was certainly, I saw it on a couple blogs this morning. I think Capitol Hill Blue actually picked it up.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And, you know, you read so many in the morning and you don't know what's
what. I know what you mean.
But I believe Capitol Hill Blue did pick immediately up on it. And as you recall, and I am blocking on his name, it was Scowcroft. It was Brent Scowcroft.
Brent Scowcroft, yeah.
Remember, he wrote a very anti-Bush 2 editorial at one point.
Yeah, it was actually a Don't Invade Iraq piece that he wrote for the New York Times, wasn't it? Yeah.
And this is getting back at Bush 1, there is no question.
Amazing. Amazing. Not to mention the fact that they're trying to say that yesterday Dick Cheney did a conference call in which he suggested that the election of Ned Lamont is the beginning of the end for the Democratic Party.
Oh, he got on Rush Limbaugh and basically said that, I think. Or actually, he had the head of the Republican Party say that.
Yeah. So in order to believe that, you have to believe that what we're doing in Iraq is somehow making America more secure and safe. And I don't think most Americans believe that, Ellen.
Well, most 60% of Americans, the latest poll, do not believe it. It actually is held pretty consistently at 60%. And the fact is people are understanding, look, if this is going on in London, it's clearly probably happening here, and why aren't we putting more energy? energy towards security, because the war, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out, if these guys are in England doing this, what are we doing in Iraq?
Right.
Shouldn't we be dealing with this, you know, in Europe?
Yeah, and not to mention just, you know, the underlying social issues. You know, the whole idea of the best welfare program is a job, and people who are working are not making bombs.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News. Thanks, Ellen. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Remember, democracy starts with you.
Tag your ears. President kicked democracy out the door, and he shipped it off to a foreign shore, giving birth instead to a holy war. I don't know why those Iraqis got so sore. We only killed 100,000 or more. It's called collateral damage when you're waging a war. Get democracy back to the USA, 'cause it's slipping further and further away. And remember, democracy starts with you.
Tag your ears.
I got to tell you how flattering it is to have somebody write a song based on your rants on the radio. And thank you so much for that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-440-8466. We'll be coming back to your phone calls in just a few minutes here. But first, David, is it Pattori, David?
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing that right? David Pattori lost your brother James in the World Trade Center on 9/11. You're a member of the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. And on this day when I've gotten several emails this morning from one from GOP USA, suggesting that the election of Ned Lamont over Joe Lieberman was the beginning of the end of the, you know, of America losing the war on terror, and that somehow it emboldened, you know, or implying that this is emboldening people in the UK to put bombs on planes and all this kind of, you know, whipping up fear, these terror tactics that the Republican Party is using against the American people. What's the response of your organization to all of this?
Well, we're an organization of 9/11 family members who came together to try to find alternatives to just responding to violence with greater amounts of violence. And I guess I would respond to people that are sending you those emails with trying to take a little more sober and long-term view of what's going on. You know, it's 5 years after September 11th, and I'm reading that these alleged plots are similar to plans that were made in 1994, the Operation Bojinka plans to blow up airliners over the Pacific. And here it is, 5 years after 9/11, you know, 12 years after that, and we have to ask ourselves, what have we been doing in the past 5 years to reduce the likelihood that these kind of things would happen? And I think we have to acknowledge that in the 21st century, anybody can pretty much do anything they want using mass media, mass transportation, all these new technologies, and there is simply no way to police every cup of coffee that goes on an airplane. And I think that speaks to the need to start thinking about the root causes. You know, that's a term that sort of gets people all excited. You know, we've got to think about the why of terrorism. Why do people want to harm us? And are we doing things that are making people more likely to want to harm us? And we have to look at what we've done since 9/11. We've invaded Afghanistan. We've invaded Iraq. We've had like a 5-year recruitment campaign for Al-Qaeda, which is playing on all of these, you know, militaristic responses. And I think we have to start asking ourselves, you know, this isn't like the day after 9/11. This is 5 years after 9/11. How is it that we're still dealing with exactly the same threat 5 years later, and what can we do to help people in their own communities, in their own countries, to give greater voice to moderate regimes, moderate
right.
people.
Yeah, we're continuing to prop up. I mean, we have now recognized Gaddafi. Why? Because he wants to sell us oil. We're
right.
continuing to prop up the Saudi royal family in the face of rising discontent with them. I mean, the disaster in Iraq is self-evident. We're taking a belligerent stance towards Iran when there was in 2000, in 2001, when Bush was installed in the White House, there was actually a fairly strong and growing pro-democracy, pro-American democracy movement in Iran, and Bush blew them out of the water by you know, the axis of evil statement, which was just cheap political grandstanding at the time, and the speechwriter thought it was an eloquent turn of phrase. I mean, this, in a way, David Pittori, I think one of the most elegant statements about economics is that the best welfare program in the world is a job. And in other words, you know, the best way to help people out is to make their lives better, and then they're not, you know, they're not going to be asking you for assistance. Similarly, the best anti-terror program has to be some variation on that. It has to be a decent life, and a job, a democracy, health care, a decent life. And is there a way to reduce that to a sentence or to a slogan where people can get it?
Well, I was remembering meeting a teacher who had a number of classes, and he brought up the slogan from the Russian Revolution, which was jobs, bread, and peace. That's what they wanted. And he asked his classes, you know, if you had to choose jobs, bread, or peace, which one of those three things would you choose? And he said all of his classes, the majority of kids in those classes, chose peace. Because if you don't have peace, then it doesn't matter if you have jobs or if you have enough to eat.
Right.
You've got to create a culture in which you can just live. And I think we've got to do sensible things. Like, of course, we're really happy that these plots were foiled. We're happy that, you know, they're weeding out people from airplane lifts. But we've got to do more than that. And we've got to start appealing to people's better sides. And as I was saying, you know, try to give more voice to moderate people and try to deal with those root causes and why extremists are growing up in people's communities and what can we do to really engage them and prevent them from taking these extreme actions. And we have to remember that war is the most extreme action one can possibly take. So
right.
in response to war, of course you're going to have more extreme actions.
War is legalized murder. I mean, it's legalized, organized mayhem. So, David Pittori, are you with peacefultomorrows.org is the website, peacefultomorrows.org. Are you hearing from any American politicians of note? I mean, Dennis Kucinich has been talking about this forever, beyond Dennis Kucinich, are you hearing from any American politicians or seeing any action or getting any kind of a sense that the American people are sharing this story and this vision that you just shared with me of how best to deal with terrorism?
Yeah, I mean, we had a press conference with Kucinich back in 2002 before the start of the Iraq War, just to say that we thought we had to have an alternative approach to the idea of bombing Iraq. I think the fifth anniversary somehow is just this really, really important milestone. I think Americans and a lot more politicians are really beginning to see that what we've been doing hasn't worked. Vast majorities of Americans think our country is going in the wrong direction and we need new policies. And I think we have to, from the grassroots, be the voice rather than, you know, finding politicians necessarily that support us. We have to really be the voice that just demands these alternatives. And this fall, we are actually bringing, in the week leading up to 9/11, we're bringing people to New York from 30 countries around the world who have personally experienced terrorism, have lost limbs, have experienced the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, South Africa, Japan, the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we're bringing them to speak to the American people, and we hope that a lot of politicians will be listening and telling us their experience of terrorism and violence and war and what they've done in their own communities to seek alternatives. And most of them have created organizations, civic groups. They have found a way out of their horror horror and misery to create peace groups, and we're trying to create an international network of these peace groups so that Americans can see at this really important fifth anniversary of 9/11 that there are alternatives to what we've been doing, which clearly are working. And so we hope that people are going to be listening to their messages and starting to just broaden their horizons because, you know, 5 years after 9/11, we cannot be looking in everybody's coffee cup.
Yeah, well said. Well said. You're absolutely right. David Pitori with PeacefulTomorrows.org. David, thank you for being with us.
Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. Good speaking with you. David, who lost his brother James in the World Trade Center on 9/11. It really is. I mean, we really do need to be looking at the root causes. I mean, the root causes of this, and it goes right back to American foreign policy. Martha in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on WPTT. Hey, Martha, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's so good that you're out there and speaking reasonably. It's just good to know there's one voice in the world.
Well, there's quite a few good voices. And on your radio station, you have Lynn Cullen. I mean, she's marvelous.
Absolutely. That's how I found you, by sticking around after Lynn was over. Yeah. But I don't have any big sweeping answers, but I do have an experience that illuminates at least a piece of it. And it happened last weekend. My brother, who is a PhD in physics, by the way, I needed to say that because I'm so proud of him, was visiting. And he and I were talking about what is going on in Lebanon right now. And as we spoke more and more and more, I began to notice that we both of us were becoming so engaged, like emotionally, and so upset as the days go by and more innocent Lebanese people are just being slaughtered. And as more and more infrastructure of that country is smashed to bits with years and years and years of reconstruction down the road, what I began to notice was that I was becoming really angry. And that's really fed by the fact that it just feels to us that Arabs aren't recognized, that their deaths aren't valuable.
You're an Arab American, Martha?
Yeah, I should say I'm a second generation American.
Martha, we have to take a break. Can you hold for just a moment? We'll finish this conversation on the other side. Hang on just a second. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
A song will lift as the mainsail ships and the boat drifts unto the shoreline. And the sun will respect every face on the deck the hour that the ships come in. Then the sands will roll out a carpet of gold for your weary toes to be a-touching. And the ship's wise men will remind you once again that the whole wide world is watching.
And welcome back. Yeah, see, that's part of the problem. The whole wide world is watching, and as they're watching, the Bush administration is trying to get retroactive war crime protections for themselves. And Bush comes out today and says, we will take the necessary steps to protect the American people. Martha, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, we were talking. You said you're a Syrian-American, I believe.
Yes, second-generation-born Syrian-American.
And there was a point you wanted to make, and you hadn't gotten to it. I appreciate it if you could.
Yes, that's okay. Yeah, we were talking about what was going on, and I began to get angry. But the point that frightened me was when I stepped back and realized that if I had been born in a different place, that I was very close to being radicalized. And I brought it up, and my brother felt exactly the same way, that it wouldn't take much had we been born over there instead of here, and especially if we'd been born poor, because that's fertile picking grounds for Hezbollah.
Now, are you Muslim?
No, we were raised Christian. We're Greek Orthodox, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
so
is a real minority over there.
Yeah. This is the thing that I think so few Americans get, and perhaps it's because fewer than 5% of Americans have ever left the United States, but that, you know, the entire world doesn't view America the same way we view America.
No, they don't.
And and we need to conduct ourselves in a way that is viewed as positive and favorable. And there have been times in our history when we have, when the rest of the world has looked to us literally as a beacon.
Yes.
and wanted to be like America. And frankly, I think during the years of Bill Clinton's administration, much of the world was looking at
yes.
us and saying, you know,
yes.
other than the fact that these crazies are trying to impeach this guy for what? I mean, you know, if the worst that the world thinks of us is that we are prudish and nutty, that's fine. I'll take that.
Yes.
But right now they're looking at us and going, these people are killers.
And the Lebanese people kept looking to us for help. They kept looking to us, especially after this began, to put an even hand on this
yeah.
and to tell the Israelis, you know, of course you have a reasonable case, but this is not the way to fix it.
Well, and I think many people in Israel were looking to us too for some moderation, and you know, I mean, we have an obligation under the United Nations, 1665, I think it is, the resolution.
Yes.
When Israel pulled out of Lebanon, and then when Syria pulled out of Lebanon, there was this vacuum, and Hezbollah stepped into that vacuum, and we have an obligation to have helped fill that vacuum so that Hezbollah doesn't fill it in a way that remilitarizes the area. I mean,
that makes me crazy, Tom, because that was the first year of W's reign,
yeah.
and that was the first opportunity he had to actually make a difference. He was criticizing the Lebanese government for not routing Hezbollah. You know, it's a government that was on its baby feet at that point.
Right.
And their entire military expenditure for their government is $300 million. To put it in perspective, the Israelis, their budget was $9 billion. So
well, it's not even just, you know, relative to that. I mean, it's like 30 seconds of spending here in the United States, too.
Exactly.
But, because Israel is an ally of ours. Lebanon is an ally of ours. This shouldn't be about Israel versus Lebanon or vice versa. This should be about trying to bring stability to the region by being
right.
friends of and supporters of both of these countries.
If he was criticizing them for not routing Hezbollah, the only reason I bring up the Israeli budget is that he wanted them to do what Israel in those years of occupation could not.
Yeah.
And that was the moment he should have stepped into the void
yes.
and propped up the democratic government as best he could.
But you know why he didn't? He didn't because he had John Bolton, because John Bolton was reflecting his point of view that if the top 10 floors of the UN were blown off, everything would be just fine. And to do that, to really and truly go in there and help southern Lebanon and fill that void would have required the United Nations. It would have required an international body to really do it right and to do it in a way that didn't look like we were trying to Americanize a part of the world,
right.
particularly in a part of the world that was largely Sunni Muslim. And Bush was just unwilling to participate with the UN. He doesn't play well with others.
No, he
Martha,
doesn't.
Martha, I have to move along, but I appreciate your thoughtful call.
Thank you.
It's very thoughtful. Thank you
good
very
to
much.
Good talk to you.
Yeah, good talking with you, too, and thanks for listening to us there on WPTT. Leon, Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Leon, what's on your mind?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling, I think one of the root causes of so much of this is that Americans, the majority of Americans, have this infantile sense of entitlement and a dangerous inability to do math.
Yeah, I mean, when you fill up your car at the gas pump, a certain percentage of that money is going directly
yeah.
to Saudi Arabia, where it's going directly to support some madras where they are teaching that Americans and Jews and Christians are evil and pigs and blah, 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 blah. And and that's not a slam on Islam, by the way, because the Wahhabists don't reflect the majority of mainstream thinking in Islam. But that's what's coming out of Saudi Arabia with our gasoline dollars.
With our gasoline dollars. But Americans, we don't even want to turn the channels on our TV. We got to use a remote.
Yeah, I know. But
if the power we have as a people is amazing to just conserve everything.
Yeah.
We would run the oil companies out of business.
Well, or yeah.
The electric companies.
Yep. The point that Helen Caldicott was making.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Wash your dishes. You don't need a dishwasher. I mean, if we just, you know, I don't know how you, a country like ours that is so used to just everything, you know, being so coddled.
Well, step by step, Leon, step by step. And we need to inform, and thank you for the call, and we need to be informing people. You know, when you drive alone, you're driving with Osama. When you drive a Hummer, you're driving with Osama. That should be our slogan. Because it is so true, and it's so tragic that we have a foreign policy that is driven by oil, by our addiction to oil, and we're unwilling to do anything. Well, Jimmy Carter tried. The Republicans have been unwilling to do anything about it since 1980. Thus the tragedy. Thus the tragedy of today. Thus what's going on in London right now, which is causing people who are trying to fly around the United States to be pulling their hair out because the Republicans turned their back on Jimmy Carter. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, apparently they hadn't made any bombs, hadn't quite gotten it together, but it sure made a great headline. Tony Blair in trouble, George Bush in trouble. In fact, this email I just received from the White House Communications Office at whitehousecommunications@whitehouse.gov. I mean, this is literally George W. Bush's office sending out emails to talk show hosts with a smiling picture of George W. Bush as his president of the United States at the top. I got a letter from George. It says straight to the remark, straight to the point at the top. And this remarks by President Bush upon arrival in Washington, Green Bay, Wisconsin, August 10, 2006. The president, the recent arrests that our fellow citizens are now learning about are a stark reminder that this nation is at war with Islamic fascists who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom to hurt our nation. And then he goes on to say, I want to thank the government of Tony Blair. And now I have to say, I would not say that we're at war with Islamic fascists any more than I would say that Italy was at war with the Red Brigades, or we were at war with what was the group that kidnapped Patty Hearst? You know, it's the Symbionese Liberation Army, or that, you know, anything like that. But yeah, there are Muslims and Christians. There are radical groups within Islam and within Christianity who are dedicated to destroying the government of the United States. Tim McVeigh represented the Christian version of it, and they're out there. And there's books about this. You can websites on this. There's a very real movement, a Christian anti-American movement. Part of them are motivated by much of the same motivation that got bin Laden, the belief that this is a corrupt society and needs to be turned back into a 14th century biblical society. And part of them are constitutional fundamentalists who think that the country just needs to be turned back to pre-Civil War times, where the individual states can completely decide their own fate. They don't need we don't need federal government intervention here, and things like the right to have slaves. Actually, I had a guy from the Constitution Party on my local program this morning. He said he'd repeal the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. The 15th Amendment said you can't discriminate against people based on color. These were the amendments that were put into place that ended slavery. So anyhow, you've got some right-wing fundamentalist Christians who want to destroy America, and you've got some right-wing fundamentalist Muslims who want to destroy America. And I don't know, there's probably right-wing fundamentalists and a few other religions that want to destroy America as well. They're not quite as conspicuous. The question is, are we feeding that beast, or are we eliminating the cause of that beast? In Bush's little email here to me this morning, from his, which is a recap of his speech, he says, this country is safer than it was prior to 9/11. I'm sorry, we're not. When the rest of the world thinks poorly of you, when you've got a general who's still a general running around going, our God is bigger than their God, when you've got a president who talks in code that most of the world understands, as being apocalyptic. You know, like end times. We need a war on the plain of Armageddon so that we can, you know, bring back Jesus. When you've got that going, I'm sorry, the United States is not safer. The Bush administration has made this country less secure. We're frisking Granny at the airport. We're sure doing that. I mean, quite literally. My mother is flying out today to Oregon to visit us from Michigan, and Louise got a call from our niece who's traveling with her, and they were connecting through the Chicago airport, and she said it's an absolute madhouse. And they took away, they took away the drink that Mom had bought, and it's just absolutely. And Ellen Ratner this morning on Morning Report, she said that they were taking away people's lipstick, or chapstick, rather. I mean, they're hysterical. We are being terrorized. But it is not an external form of terror, in my opinion. We are being terrorized by people inside the United States who politically benefit from that terror and then tell us that they are keeping us safe. When really what they're doing is they are feeding this beast. And it's just I don't know how to say it beyond that. It's just it's wrong, and it's a tragedy. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. A lot on the table today. We talked to Helen Caldicott about her new book on nuclear power is not the answer. We've got this general madness going on in airports all across the United States. Gary and then the Bush administration now trying to retroactively immunize themselves against war crimes. I'll tell you about that in a second. Gary in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Gary, thanks for holding on the line so long. What's on your mind?
That's okay. You're well worth listening to. It's hard to know what to respond to. I called originally because of the author on the book at the very beginning. But there had been so many issues come up. I think one of the things that it kind of to try to dovetail it all together, I think the only answer is to try to deal with the key issues, find what those are, and deal with them. This idea, it just amazes me that we're willing to fight, we're willing to try to do something over and over again, like beat our enemies to death when it isn't, when it's been shown repeatedly that that is not a function of viable way of solving this problem.
Yeah. It's the story. I don't know if you've heard me tell this story before. I probably at least once a year I love to tell this story. I remember back in 1981, in 1980 during the war with when Tanzania invaded Uganda to drive Idi Amin out. They invaded from the south, and Amin and about 10,000 of his soldiers fled through the north up to Saudi Arabia, ultimately, where he lived in a palace for the rest of his life with all his wives and finally died just a few years ago because he had converted to Islam. The Saudis made him a hero. And I was there because we took over one of the prisons where Idi Amin used to chain up people, and every morning he would have his knife bearer disembowel somebody, and then he would lick the knife at the moment that they died because he thought that would give him their life force. I mean, this guy was truly nuts. And we took over this prison and turned it into a refugee camp because when he and his men fled through the north, they had killed all the men of military age and raped most of the women and killed most of the cattle, and particularly this Katamoja area, these pastoralists, a very low population density. They were starving, and the Red Cross had pulled out because they were getting shot at, and so we went in. Welfare organization in Germany that I've worked as a volunteer with for almost 30 years, Kinder and Jugendhilfswerk Salem. And a year later, and we took over the Numalo prison farm, and now we actually run a whole program there. It's a hospital and just a whole bunch of stuff. So a year later, I went back in 1981 with Dick Gregory, who is an old friend, and he was on our board. And to do a fundraiser, basically he'd never been to Africa before. And so we're on this plane flying across the Atlantic at 2 o'clock in the morning. We both had about 3 glasses of wine and we're talking about back in the day, protesting against the Vietnam War. And he makes this comment that just is burned into my brain. He says, I don't understand why America thinks that we have to run around the world shoving our way of life down people's throats with the barrel of a gun. He says, when you've got something good, you don't have to force it on people. They will steal it. And when you look at the vast majority of democracies in the world, and there's nearly 100 of them, they all grew from within. People stole it. They said, we want our own democracy. So, pardon me, Gary, for...
Exactly. We've got to start looking for the real reasons. The reason I called in, I listened yesterday to another program where they interviewed the governor of Montana. I believe it is Brian Switzer?
Yeah, Switzer.
I don't remember. Anyway, he was talking about ultra clean coal technology as being a solution to some of the problems we're in. Yeah. Do you know anything about that? Can you talk to me about that?
I do. There is a way to burn coal that is quite clean, although it still produces carbon dioxide. The problem is, how do you grab that carbon dioxide and solidify it? And there is a technology to do that too, and it's just a question of cost.
He was saying that they have now the technology to get rid of that carbon dioxide.
Right, yeah.
I don't understand it.
You turn it into carbonate. You know, calcium carbonate, for example. You know, if you chew Tums, you know, the antacids, that's calcium carbonate. That's carbon bound up with calcium. So you can solidify.
He'd be a good guest for your program.
Yeah, he's been on the program. I've talked with Brian Switzer. Yeah, and he's a good guy. He's a good progressive. Gary, thanks for the call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good to hear from you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese.
It's time to take our country back, my friends. We asked Congressman Bernie Sanders, who's been on this show every Friday for the last 3 years. One of our callers called up and said, Bernie, I got some money to give to somebody, but my local candidate, I know he's going to win. He doesn't need it. What should I do? And Bernie said, find good candidates. Good progressive candidate. You know, you can send it off to a party if you want, but the best thing to do, find good candidates and support them. So we've been on a search, and every week here we try and get a good progressive on who's running for Congress and give you the information about that person, feature them, give you their website. So even if you don't happen to live in their area, if you want to help influence the future of American politics, you can do so. Today, Rick Seifert is with us. Seifert for Congress, S-I-F-E-R-D, for Congress.com, for Congress, F-O-R, Congress, S-I-F-E-R-D, F-O-R, Congress.com, his website. Rick Seifert, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us.
I have the best theme song in the nation on my website.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Cypher for Congress. You have to listen to it. It's a good bluegrass song.
Oh, great. Well, we'll have to check it out. Tell us, first of all, the districts, the major cities in your districts, Findlay, Lima, Marion, Manfield, Bellefontaine, is that it?
Bellefontaine, right.
Bellefontaine.
You draw a line across the center of Ohio and move up about 50 miles, it sort of runs across the west center portion of the state.
Yeah.
In the middle of corn country.
Just a little south of where I grew up in southern Michigan. So.
Right.
You're running against, first of all, whom?
A fellow by the name of Jim Jordan, who is, you might say, the nightmare for the Republican Party. He's as far right as they go. He wants to sell off schools a voucher at a time. He wants to put God back in schools. He wants to put science in the form of creationism in school. And science like global warming and things like that, those are junk science.
Junk science. Oh, jeez. Now, do you think you have a shot at this thing, Rick?
Well, it's a tough race. I mean, this is the poorest performing district for the Kerry Bush race 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
John Kerry got 34% of the vote. On the other hand, a Democrat was running against the incumbent congressman at that time, and the Democrat got 41% of the vote.
So your opponent is not all that popular. There's a good chance you could take this thing.
Right. Well, this is an open seat now. The current incumbent, Mike Oxley, Oxley-Sarbanes.
Ah, He's retiring.
He's retiring. So it's an open seat. And when Mike Oxley first ran, he only won by 134 votes.
Wow. And now you're running against a right-wing crank to beat all right-wing cranks. So
that's right.
We're talking with Rick Seifert, S-I-F-E-R-D, Seifert for F-O-R, Congress.com, his website. Go check it out and listen to his theme music. We just have a couple of minutes here, Rick. Real quickly, touch on some of the issues. Health care.
Well, it's a business killer. Even Republicans want a solution. And the solution is going to be single payer. It's going to be national health care. I don't care what they say.
Medicare for all.
That's right.
Yeah.
I represent people. I'm a lawyer. I represent people coming down 75 from Canada going to Florida. Canadians love their health care system. I don't care what people say.
Yeah.
I have yet to hear any of them say they don't like it.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, one of my best friends, Louis Melmadrona, is a doctor, and he just moved up to Canada to practice medicine there.
Right.
It's pretty amazing. Actually, he's teaching medicine up there as well as practicing it. But so healthcare, the war in Iraq.
Well, I'm a veteran, Vietnam. I'm against the war. I came out on Pearl Harbor Day, announced my candidacy. I said I was against the war, the Civil War, the occupation.
Yeah, I call it the occupation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. You got it right. And my opponent says we have to win. And can you explain to me what that means?
Well, my riff on this is that we already won the war. When George Bush stood up on the aircraft carrier, it was an illegal war to begin with, but it was a war, right? And
right.
And we knocked down their army. We took control of their government buildings. We deposed their leaders, and that's called winning a war.
Right.
And then began the occupation in May of 2003.
Right.
And the occupation has not gone that well.
Right.
Because you can't use an army to do what a police force should be doing, and you can't rebuild a country with Halliburton. I'm sorry, they just.
And my opponent is one of these chicken hawks who never served and wants my son to serve.
Yeah.
And I object to that.
Good thing. We just have about a half a minute left. Rick Seifert, S-I-F-E-R-D, for F-O-R, Congress.com. Check out his website. Rick, the economy. What should we do?
Well, first of all, we got to do something about the deficits. We got to clean up our trade with China. We can't do this borrow and spend, let our kids pay for it. We just can't do it. That's a big issue around here among farmers, among businessmen, and I think that's the first thing we've got to attend to is the deficit and the debt.
And then clean up our trade policies.
Oh, clean up trade policies with China. George Bush is, I don't want to say it, but he's like China's bitch.
Yeah.
He says he wants to adjust the currency rate, and they just dismiss him.
Yeah, it really is rather startling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rick Seifert, S-I-F-E-R-D, Seifert for Congress, S-I-F-E-R-D, F-O-R, Congress.com. Go visit his site. Help him out. Rick, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
And good luck on your race.
Thank you.
27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no!
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Wake up and shake it up, America. From north to south, from east to west, from sea to shining sea. Our government is a fight for we, the people who can't ignore that we shall reap what we sow, so we better sow.
Welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Remember, my friends, you have the power. This is, to the extent that the United States is still a democracy, and we have to hold it together, we have to get politically engaged, we have to get active, we have to get out there and participate and pull this thing together and hold it together. Let's check out what's going on, and then we'll go to your phone calls here in just a second, but first let's check out what's going on with the ongoing occupation of Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And they're alive in the balance. There are people on the fire.
Children at the cannons. The following security incidents in Iraq, August 10th, from Reuters. In Najaf, 30 people were killed and dozens wounded by bomb blasts in the market near the Imam Ali Shrine. In Fallujah, a policeman was shot dead. In Mosul, gunmen killed one civilian in a flashpoint city of Mosul. In Hawija, a roadside bomb targeting a police patrol exploded, killing two police officers and critically wounding two others. And in Mahmudiya, Ma'ad al-Sadun, the brother of Sunni legislator Mahmad Hahir al-Sadun, was shot dead by gunmen in his home. Also in Iraq, events. Iraq's prime minister, this is from The Guardian, the UK, Iraq's prime minister Nouri al-Maliki has angrily charged American forces with undermining national reconciliation after a U.S.-led raid in the eastern Baghdad stronghold of the radical Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr reportedly caused the death of three people, including a woman and a child. The forthright criticism of U.S. tactics comes just days after the launch of a much-publicized American-Iraqi crackdown, supported initially by Mr. Maliki, on sectarian Sunni-Shia violence in the capital. But in a statement on government television late Monday night, Mr. Maliki said he was very angered and pained by the latest operation, which involved air and ground forces in Sadr City. He said reconciliation cannot go hand-in-hand with operations that violate the rights of citizens. Somebody should tell George that. It's true in the United States as well. 60% of Americans, this is from CNN, oppose the U.S. war in Iraq, the highest number since polling on the subject began. If you want to call it a war, I would call it an occupation. 60% of Americans. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Richard in Seattle. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about Dr. Caldicott, who is your first guest.
Yes. Dr. Helen Caldicott has a new book, for those who are just tuning in, she has a new book out called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, and or Words to That Effect.
Words to That Effect, yeah. I came from, if you will, a nuclear family. My grandfather worked at Hanford Nuclear Reservation. My mom was raised in Richland. I think she was made seriously ill from thyroid cancer from being a downwinder.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, I want you to consider that the larger issue here, like with Ned Lamont and Lieberman, where what the real threat is not one guy getting sent to the Congress or Senate. It's that you have a grassroots individual coming up and disrupting the network of the big old boy network.
Yeah.
And the same thing holds true.
I agree. This is, by the way, I think why so many, people are going, why did Barbara Boxer go in? And, why did Bill Clinton,
Exactly.
They're part of the system.
This is the
system taking care of its own. And now it's going to be really interesting is Joe Lieberman's no longer part of the system. And is the system going to set him aside or is it going to continue to support him?
Well, the same old boy network works for the energy system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what I'd like to point out is that there the new paradigm for energy is the same new paradigm for the democracy, and that is a distributed energy network.
Decentralized.
You're not going to have large centralized nuclear power plants or coal clean, quote unquote, coal power plants. You're going to have small independent producers, home producers, people with solar cells on their roofs, windmills in their backyards. I participate in a group of people who do research based on reverse engineering what is called the Testatica ML converter, which takes static electricity out of the atmosphere and converts it into usable household current that's running a community in Switzerland right now and has done it for 20 years.
Whoa, that's amazing. Germany is doing this right now. I mean, about a third of the houses that I saw, the last time I was there a few months ago, I took a train across from Frankfurt to Stuttsteinach, about a four-hour, five-hour train ride. And just looking north out the window, the south side of all the roofs, about a third of them, it seemed like, had solar panels on them because the government is subsidizing this.
The Chinese announced recently that they're dedicating $200 billion over the next 10 years to invest in alternative energy technology.
Yeah.
That could be our, if we hadn't borrowed it from them, our $200 billion to invest in alternative energy in this country, which would have made jobs, which would have made the nation more secure because it would have taken off dependence of oil, would have reversed the greenhouse gas effect.
Right, and we'd no longer be giving money to Saudi Arabia. And this, by the way, is what Jimmy Carter started.
I know.
We have to keep in mind, Jimmy Carter actually started this thing. Anyhow, Richard, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you for letting me on.
You're welcome. And in fact, back in 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Marianne Williamson edited a book for Rodale Press called Imagine What America Could Be Like in 50 Years If We Do Everything Right. and she invited me to write a chapter for it. And the chapter that I wrote for that book, and it's still in print, it's called Imagine, edited by Marianne Williamson. The chapter that I wrote was about communities generating their own power and houses generating their own power, and about how America could be if we went back to small communities that were entirely self-sufficient. David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. At which point did Osama bin Laden stop being a paid CIA operative, or was it a Freudian slip of the tongue by Snowjob mentioning George H.W. Bush and Osama bin Laden in the same sentence?
I'm guessing the latter, frankly. I think he meant to criticize Clinton, not Bush Sr.
But not enough has been said or made as far as Osama bin Laden's involvement with the CIA.
Yeah.
And I'm going to research more of that and then get back to you. But
well, it's pretty easy to Google this stuff.
This current piece of terrorist propaganda, Tom, this reminds me of when the Nazis were bombing England, you know, in World War II, and the police were busting people for not having their windows blacked out enough.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to, you know, see any speck of light, they were busted.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. And well, I don't remember it. I mean, I wasn't there for it, but it was a grim time. Certainly.
It really was, and just this. You know, what they're doing with the people at the airport.
I think that there is a time, David, when it is appropriate for a nation to hunker down. And I'm just saying that this isn't the time. That Bush is trying to create something as if it was, you know, World War III. I mean,
that's
these
right.
guys, they want World War III because they think that it will give them that kind of power. And it's not... It's just not a good thing. It's not a healthy thing. It's not the right thing for democracy. It's not what we should be doing.
It isn't. And not even with the help of embryonic stem cells will their fake terror plots grow any legs.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. David, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hey, we need to invoke FDR's name and his wise leadership quote that there is nothing to fear but fear itself. And if there is a World War III brewing, we need an FDR not only to lead us through, he led us through World War II, but he also instituted the policies that brought us our golden age of the middle class, which is all but over, but we can revive that. And FDR turned private industry on a dime into a war machine. And I have to ask, what would W do? He'd probably go to his corporate friends and ask permission, and they'd tell him to outsource a World War III. I can't imagine any other outcome. And FDR was able to lead us through a war of his time and met the challenges of that war. So now we need real Dems who can see this new world struggle and come up with new solutions, not by being the world bully, but by resolving problems with our allies. And if that means dealing in the back rooms with non-state terrorists, then that's what it means. It's not like it hasn't been done before. And we also need them to invest in intelligence personnel who will know the language and culture of our enemies and our friends in the Middle East.
Yeah, no, great, great, great points, Bonnie. All well made. And Franklin Roosevelt said, you know, one of the things we have to do is we have to be a good neighbor. I mean, it's just
yesterday.
Very, I'm sorry, wrong FDR clip. This was his moment of infamy. But actually, I think I've got a clip of Churchill here that may, is this it?
Our strongest weapon in this war
here
is that conviction of the dignity
Franklin
and
Roosevelt.
Brotherhood of man.
You get this? He's talking, this is World War II, Franklin Roosevelt.
Our strongest weapon in this war is that conviction of the dignity and brotherhood of man, which Christmas Day signifies.
This is his fireside chat on Christmas Day. Our strongest weapon in World War II is the idea of the dignity of man. And Bush, in the meantime, go to commondreams.org, right up at the top, retroactive war crime protection proposed. This is from the Associated Press. The Associated Press. The Bush administration drafted amendments to the War Crimes Act that would retroactively protect policymakers from possible criminal charges for authorizing any humiliating and degrading treatment of detainees, according to lawyers who've seen the proposal. The move by the administration is the latest effort to deal with treatment of those taken into custody in the, I would say, so-called war on terror. You get this? Bush is trying to get a law passed that he can't be prosecuted for crimes against humanity, essentially. And then you've got...
Our strongest weapon in this war is that conviction of the dignity and brotherhood of man.
And then you got Franklin Roosevelt telling us what it really is all about. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If I had one prayer to pull out thin air, everyone, everywhere would be happy. Yeah, we'd hand out.
And welcome back. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Before I go back to your phone calls, I just want to close up this hour today, or this program today, with two quick quotes. The first is from that famous warrior, General Douglas MacArthur, a man who led many men into battle and saw thousands, tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, I don't know, of men die at his command, under his command. And I don't mean that in a depreciating way. This is the fellow who helped us win World War II. And this Douglas MacArthur, a man who, unlike George W. Bush, actually served in battle when his nation called, unlike Dick Cheney, actually served when his nation called, unlike Karl Rove, actually served when his nation called. This the thoughts of a warrior about war.
It has been said, in effect, that I was a warmonger. Nothing could be further from the truth.
This was a speech, by the way, on Pearl Harbor Day. Douglas MacArthur.
I know war as few other men now living know it, and nothing to me is more revolting. I have long advocated its complete abolition, as its very destructiveness on both friend and foe has rendered it useless as a means of settling international disputes.
There you go. That is General Douglas MacArthur. There is a real warrior. And Bush wants to be a phony warrior. He wants to run and go, we got a war on terror, and I'm a war leader, and I'm a wartime president. I'm sorry, Bush. I'm sorry, George. We're not buying it. And then Jack Kennedy, speaking about the greatness of America.
Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike.
Now, I want you, as you're listening to this, to remember that today the Bush administration is proposing legislation that would exempt Bush from being prosecuted for war crimes.
That the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed.
Of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. So you mourn the greatness of this country in the face of the smallness of the guys who are leading it right now. Jack Kennedy continues. By the way, he talks about riding the tiger. He's talking of war. This is another man who served in World War II.
And to which we are committed today at home and around the world.
That the human rights. See, back then, human rights got applause.
Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do.
And Bush has divided us all.
And to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside.
Get that. And Kennedy continues.
So let us begin anew, remembering on both sides that civility is not a sign of weakness, and sincerity is always subject to proof. Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate.
And Bush refuses to talk to Iran. He refuses to talk to North Korea. I mean, do you get the difference?
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it.
And I would submit to you that that hour is now. We are there now. We are here now. This country is confronting a great crisis right now that Jack Kennedy was talking about. And a crisis that has been brought about by people who want to use war as a political tool. As a political tool. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the reason that Bush ginned up this war in 2002, just before the November elections, was to try to recapture control of the Senate because Jim Jeffords had decided he wasn't going to be a Republican anymore. And it goes beyond a shame. I mean, it is such a crime. We have to take this country back and restore the greatness that was America. That is America. I mean, it still survives in the hearts of Americans all across this country. We must. Coming up tomorrow, Congressman Bernie Sanders will be with us, Brunch with Bernie, and John Zogby is going to drop by on the latest breaking polls and what they mean to you and me. Remember, my friends, always remember, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. America begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.